Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 48. Consequence. The council chamber of the Chem Barons was in ruins. Not even the massive table that had seated them all in the center of the room had survived. Despite its sturdy nature, it too lay in ruins, along with all of the chairs, the expensive crystalline projector at the center, and even sections of the walls. The Chem Barons who had been gathered for the meeting had all fled when the destruction began, all except for Lux and Jinx couldn't find it in herself to be surprised. Frankly, she had considered adding her own fury to the mix, but had instead opted to let Renata vent her unspeakable rage while she and Jinx stood off to the side and watched. Jinx was furious too, though she showed it differently than others. Her eyes were wide and fixed on the floor, and Lux could see the calculations happening behind her eyes. Even her metal fingers were trembling with barely constrained violence, and Lux could practically see her reaching for where Pow-Pow usually hung. It was a good thing they'd left her weapons at the front desk. As for herself, there wasn't a word for the feeling in Lux's chest when she heard the report. The firelights that had been keeping eyes on the area where Seraphine and what was left of Cythria of Cloudfield were fighting had told the Council of Chem Barons everything, and to say that Lux was conflicted would have been the understatement of the year. It wasn't that she was surprised that Seraphine had been harboring Janna. She had suspected as much, and in truth, Lux was of the opinion that Janna should have chosen Serra to be her host all along. Even if she wasn't the symbol of faith that Jinx was, Serra was far closer to her state of mind and being than Jinx would ever be. As much as she hated Janna for what she had tried to do, trying to heal their shared dream, Lux couldn't blame her for seeking another host. God, aspect, or mortal, the need to survive was a universal drive. Like all aspects, Janna was, more or less, a divine parasite. But Lux couldn't begrudge even a parasite the desire to survive, since it was a natural and necessary instinct. What she begrudged was Janna's complete and total failure to protect Seraphine. If she was going to be a parasite, she could have at least been a useful one, but no, when push had come to shove, Camille had gotten one over on her in the worst possible way. "Are you finished?" Lux asked quietly as Renata collapsed into her now broken chair. Half of its back was missing. Renata's chem-scorched eyes flicked up to fix hatefully on Lux, lingered for a moment, then cooled. Her features settled slowly into a cold mask of incandescent rage as she said, "Yes. I believe I am."
"Good," Lux replied.
"Now how do we get her back? If I knew that, I would have done it from the start," Renata snarled. Lux locked her hands behind her waist to keep herself from lashing out. Her own temper was on the verge of bettering her, and she refused to allow that to happen. Not while Sarah's life was on the line.
"Then we need a plan," she said. "We need to know where they took her and why. They killed Cythria, which was surprising. She was a powerful weapon, if a somewhat unstable one, but they didn't kill Seraphine. Which means she's still alive for a reason, and I think we both know what reason that is."
"Janna," Renata said in an icy temper.
"You knew, I assume?" Lux asked.
"Of course I knew," Renata replied sharply. "I knew something was off for quite a long time, but I allowed Seraphine her space and her secrets as always. But she confided the truth to me prior to our wedding ceremony." She grimaced as she massaged her temple. "I should have known this would go wrong. I should have known. I should have—"
"Even if you had, there was nothing you could have done," Lux said over her.
"It's not as though you can separate an aspect from its host after the fact."
A snap broke through the air, jarring both Lux's and Renata's attentions to Jinx. Her eyes were wide and lit with madness as she snapped her metal fingers again once, twice, then three times, as if trying to recall something.
"Jinx," Lux said carefully, "what's wrong?"
"Say that again,"
Jinx said, rather than answer her question. Say what? Lux asked.
What you said about aspects and shit. Say it again.
Lux chewed her lip thoughtfully for a moment, then said,
It's not as if you can separate an aspect from its host after the fact, you mean?
But what if you could?
Jinx asked.
But you can't, Renata replied.
But what if you could?
Jinx snarled back, her whole body tense with whipcord muscle, and Renata met her glare pound for pound until finally Lux stepped between them.
Enough,
Lux said. Then turned to Jinx. Dear, calm down. She reached out and stroked Jinx's cheek gently, and the muscles there relaxed beneath her touch as they always did. You've thought of something, haven't you? So just take your time, take a deep breath, and tell me what you're thinking. Jinx took a shaky step back, and her shoulders sagged while her eyes darted to and fro. Lux couldn't recall the last time she'd seen Jinx this unhinged. She was erratic by nature, but this was different. Something had spooked her badly, and whatever it was clearly had her in the throes of something unpleasant. But rushing her was never a good thing, and despite her rage, even Renata had to recognize that something was happening in the rear quarters of Jinx's mind, the place where puzzle pieces that no one else could see got crushed together, fitting and clicking into place in rapid-fire spasms that generated leaps of logic no other person that Lux had ever met was capable of, not even Victor. Jinx was, in the most literal sense of the word, a genius. Her mind functioned in a way that normal people simply could not grasp, because the architecture of that mind was just too different. It was how she had grasped the fundamentals of Hextech from no more than a half-baked research journal and a single gemstone. It was how she had taken those fundamentals and then used them as a springboard to rocket the technology forward two or three generations, creating functional hybrid weapon systems that outstripped Piltover's own defenses several times over. Whatever was happening in Jinx's brain now, it was coming from that place of erratic genius, and the last thing they needed was to interrupt her.
Extract the aspect,
Jinx muttered to herself as she rubbed at the back of her head and began to pace around the rubble.
Can't extract the aspect, but what if you could? Aspect, aspect, aspect.
She froze in place and her jaw dropped.
Aspect of what?
Lux cocked her head, trying to follow Jinx's ramblings. It was difficult because when she did that, it was only a fraction of what was actually happening in her head, so it was like following a tenth of a conversation. Sometimes the context was enough, but this time...
Jinx, what's wrong?
Lux asked.
Aspect of what?
Jinx whirled around to stare at both her and Renata.
An aspect of what?
Renata sighed.
Speak sense, Chemlord, I am begging you, she said through her teeth. Johnny is an aspect of what?
Jinx repeated angrily.
We call them aspects, yeah, but an aspect is like a piece, right? A piece of a piece of a bigger piece. So she's an aspect, but what's she an aspect of?
The look on Jinx's face was one that outstripped anything that Lux had ever seen, and she thought she'd seen all of Jinx's expressions. This one, though, there was almost no word for it. Her eyes were wide, the muscles across her face were trembling, and her fingers were twitching spasmodically as she gulped in breaths of air like a fish that had just been dropped back into the water. It was some frenetic combination of terror and elation, as if she were on the cusp of something she both needed and hated, and was reaching out for it even as some part of her was screaming for her to step back.
The Temple of the Protector, Lux began, teaches that all aspects were created along with the world of Runeterra. Kale is the daughter of Mihira, who herself is an aspect, and both are fragments of one great divine, she recounted, those teachings having been drilled into her during her time with the Radiant to the point that she couldn't have forgotten even if she wanted to.
According to the scriptures, the one divine fragmented into the stellar firmament. Its body became the celestial realm where each aspect dwells, the golden sister, the silver sister, the judicator, the protector, the warrior, the traveler, and the trickster. The other aspects beyond those were said to have been cast out for one reason or another.
No, 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 no!
Jinx waved her hand frantically.
That's all stories, just stories, she said. Stories are just things people make up to make crazy shit make sense, but I'm already crazy, Blondie. It all already makes sense to me.
Clearly, Renata said dryly. Jinx turns to glower at her, then pointed a finger and said,
Doc Singed said that he hurt Kale by stabbing her with a petricite-lined blade, right?
Yes, and? Renata said, leaning forward. What of it? A low groan of animal frustration spilled out of Jinx.
What of it? she echoed. They're aspects. They're supposed to be invincible, right? Swords, axes, guns, grenades. None of them do jack shit to an aspect going at full chat, but one lousy petricite pig sticker wounds her?
With every word of her rant, some part of a very dark idea was starting to be dredged up in Lux's mind. Was that really it? Was that even possible?
So what if...
Jinx held up her hands and wiggled her fingers.
The question isn't, what is an aspect? What if the question is, what is an aspect made of? Because I'm made of meat and bone and other squishy bits and some metal now, but that's new.
She shook her head and reoriented.
But what is an aspect made of? Or more importantly, what is it made of that petricite can hurt?
You're joking, Renata said hollowly.
Petricite? Jinx shouted. Drains the arcane. It sucks up arcane like soil drinks water. So then, what does that make the aspects? Well, I'll tell ya. What's the one thing that's fucking all over the planet? It runs in rivers and in the dirt and the stones and the sky and in every living thing.
Lux let out a shaky breath as she said very quietly, arcane.
Damn right! Jinx thrust a finger at Lux. So what if aspects are just big fuck-off fragments of the arcane? They're so old and so powerful that they learned how to think, and then what if one or maybe a bunch of them figured out that they could make themselves bigger by absorbing more arcane? And you know what makes arcane? People! And what if praying opens up like a channel? One or two or three folks praying is like a couple of drops in the bucket, but what if it's like 10,000?
Oh, gods. Lux lifted her hands to her lips as she finally realized what it was that Jinx was trying to tell them. Then this whole war. Everything we've been doing up until now, it was all...
One big fucking piece of bait!
Jinx snarled.
That bitch was never fighting a war! She never even cared! It was all just one big fucking trick, and Janna walked right into it!
Jinx slumped down with her back against the wall as if all of that thought and realization had exhausted her. Maybe it had. Lux certainly felt like she'd run from the end of High Silvermere to the other, just trying to keep up with her. Even to Lux, this plan was beyond the pale. To manufacture an entire war for the sole purpose of causing enough casualties that Janna would be forced to surface. That was why she never reacted, no matter how much ground was taken or how many victories Zaun claimed. Because it had never mattered in the first place. All that mattered was being a big enough threat and escalating the conflict to such a scale that Janna would be unable to ignore it. Janna, the patron goddess of Zaun, had been Camille's target from the very beginning. For how long, though? How long had she been planning this? From the start, obviously, but where was the start? As far back as when she'd sicked Warwick on them? But if that was the case... Then had even Warwick been intended to be a failure? One more provocation? Or had it even mattered? Lux had the sickening thought that Camille considered any of the outcomes to be viable ones. The matriarch of Clan Pharos was sharper than Lux had given her credit for. If, Lux started slowly, she's been planning this for as long as I think she has, then that means she's been aiming for some version of this moment. Starting from the night Jinx and I destroyed damn Sectus at most. She looked up at Renata and Jinx. She's definitely been trying to coax Piltover and Zaun into escalating the conflict from the start of the war itself. Think about it. Every time we won, she would up the ante. Every time we took ground, she would reveal some new atrocity. She's even attacked us here in Zaun and gotten away clean, but never bothered with an invasion. We all assumed it was her being conservative with her troops, but what if she was just poking the bear? But why? It was all to provoke us. Renata steepled her fingers. She needed Janna to leave Zaun. Perhaps she needed that inevitable fight to happen in Piltover, even if it would result in massive civilian casualties. Because what if manifesting in Zaun would make her impossible to extract? A logistical limitation, then? Lux looked over at Jinx. What parts of the pipeworks or major spires are inaccessible from Zaun? Jinx shook her head. There ain't any, she said, making a sweeping gesture. Zaun runs all under Piltover, especially the old parts where the clan hangs out. You can get anywhere topside from anywhere in the Undercity, period. Anywhere? Lux asked carefully.
Well, yeah, I mean, anywhere but...
Jinx cut herself off, licked her lips, then very quietly said,
Stillwater.
It was a deafening pause. It made plenty of sense. Piltover had one glaring, unavoidable vulnerability to Zahn, and that was that it was built on top of it. No matter how many bulkheads they put in place or guards they posted, it would always be a gaping hole in any security system, and Camille would never have been able to abide that. Even the ancient House of Pharos was built over parts of Zahn, so it made sense that she would be forced to find a spot that was free of easy Zahnite infiltration. Of course. Renata sat back hard in her chair. Stillwater was gutted years ago as part of Sheriff Kiriman's reforms, and all but the upper levels were shut down due to inhumane conditions, but it's all still there. And to my knowledge, nobody ever did anything with that space. I always assumed it was a matter of cost-effectiveness. Too expensive to fix and too expensive to tear down, but...
How much you want to bet Clan Pharos bought the whole damn prison off the council for coppers on the crown?
Jinx asked darkly. No bet, and if they do have Seraphine there, then the question now becomes... How long? Renata asked quietly, her voice oddly vulnerable. How long until they...
Dunno,
Jinx replied after a moment.
How long's it take for Petricite to suck out a god, you think? Hours? No, not hours. This ain't normal arcane. This arcane is fighting back, and there's loads of it, so... Days?
She rubbed the back of her neck.
A week, maybe?
A week to try and crack the most defensible nut in the whole region. As far as Lux recalled from her briefing, Stillwater was a prison from the pre-Hextech days. Which also meant it was proofed against most Hextech methods of invasion. If it was all clockwork machinery and hydraulics, then the only way in would be an all-out assault or old-school infiltration, except it was over a mile out in the Conqueror's Sea, surrounded by high walls with complete visibility in all directions. Shaking her head, Lux said, If I had a month of prep, I might be able to get in, but less than a week? No, I'm sorry. Leave that to me, Renata said as she stood and swept a hand over her hair, neatly smoothing out the frayed strands that had come loose during her rampage. Give me 2 days, and I'll confirm that Stillwater is indeed where the clan has been operating out of. Once that's done... Her metal fingers dug furrows into the arm of her broken chair. I am going to annihilate everything Camille Pharos has ever built, and then I'm going to rip her metal heart out with my bare hands for touching my wife. Call when you need us, Lux said, then shot a look at Jinx, who gave an oddly solemn nod. Turning back to Renata, she added, I'm going to shake a few trees and see what falls out, but I'll be ready the moment you give the word.
And I'll talk to a few friends about an idea, Jinx said with a thin smile.
Renata gave them both a grateful nod, and they made to leave, but as they did, Lux heard Renata mutter something, not to anyone in particular, or at least not to anyone who was in the room right then. 2 days. Renata closed her eyes and shuddered. Just hold out for 2 days. I'm coming for you. The command center of Clan Pharos, situated in the secondary panopticon of what was once the lower levels of Stillwater Prison, was abuzz with activity. The matriarch of the clan had returned with the long-held target of her labyrinthine plans in tow, and Ren had never felt more proud to be a part of anything in her life. Zahn was a cancer, and like all cancers, it needed to be excised, but until now, it had enjoyed the beneficent protection of a mistaken goddess. One whose misplaced affection for the wretched had seen her take the side of the undeserving and the unworthy. That much was just more proof, as if she needed any more. That the old ways were just gross errors in judgment that allowed the mortal races to fall forward enough times that they finally managed to collapse within reach of the one true light that would see Runeterra dragged out of the Dark Ages. Progress. Gods were nothing. Gods were just old, misshapen powers that lorded their magic over others, but mortal kind was better than that. And her beloved Lady Pharos was going to prove to the whole world that there was nothing special at all about godhood. Not even a so-called divine could stand in the way of progress. The sound of rolling wheels of the prison slab echoed deafeningly as it was rolled down the old metal halls of the prison, punctuated by the clicking of her own sensible heels, her lady's bladed legs, and the lockstep thud of their 8-strong blackguard escort, each pushing the slab with one hand and carrying a negation stave in the other. The little witch Seraphine was still unconscious on the slab, her wrists, ankles, and neck bruising from the touch of the petricite manacles. But Camille had been quite adamant that those would not be enough to chain her down indefinitely. That was why they had developed something else to contain the nascent storm goddess. Halt! Camille's voice was an ironclad command. And all 8 blackguards came to a halt, along with the rolling slab, and ran at a T-section. Officer Greenspire! Camille looked down at her, and Wren couldn't help but preen a little under the attention as she replied.
Yes?
Take the host down to the machine and inter her. Revic swore it would be ready for her arrival by the time we brought her down.
And if it's not?
Wren asked sweetly. Decommission him and promote the next in line. I am not in the business of employing layabouts, and Dr. Revic has very nearly outlived his usefulness, Camille replied. Wren swept a low bow that also happened to give her lady a generous look down her vest, a look which Wren noted Camille did not neglect to take.
As you say, my lady. Your wish is my only desire.
If only all of my subordinates could be so perfect as you, my darling dove, Camille said fondly, reaching out to stroke her cheek with 2 clawed fingers.
Now go.
Nodding, Wren turned to the 8 blackguards and said,
Command transfer, Officer Greenspire, acknowledge.
Command transfer, acknowledge.
Wren winced as all 8 of them blurted the response in unison, their flanged metal voices echoing harshly around the halls.
Take a memo, my dear. Camille said after a moment, have modulators installed in their voice boxes.
She needn't have even asked for the memo. Wren made a point of using her new implants to record every single word that Camille spoke to her so that when she was alone, she could play her lady's voice back and relish in her dulcet tones. Regardless, Wren nodded obediently before issuing the motive command to the blackguards and turning down the opposite hall. It always pained her to be apart from her lady, but Camille's genius was more often needed in the central command node, and so she often had Wren act as her eyes and ears in the lower reaches of their headquarters. She was the only one whom Camille could trust implicitly, as anyone else might be a plant or a spy or otherwise simply incompetent, but Wren had proven herself. She had survived the crucible of implantation not just once but twice, and now she, like her beloved lady, was more machine than mortal. She was better. At the end of the hall, they loaded the slab into one of the large freight elevators that had once been used to deliver the massive ration and repair supplies that a prison the size of Stillwater required and began to descend. 10 floors down, the majority of the walls and structure fell away, leaving behind only the massive reinforced foundation structures built into the bedrock of the island that Stillwater was first constructed on top of. Nearly 25 whole prison levels had been excavated over the course of several years since Ferris's acquisition of the prison to make room for the massive Hextech machine and all of its associated cabling, power supplies, and capacitors that now occupied that space. All they had needed to complete the machine was a means of actually draining the arcane from a captured host, and the decades of study conducted by the clan's researchers had isolated only one compound capable of doing so. Petricite. Oddly, it was all thanks to Jinx's actions and Demacia that it happened at all. Between the brutal realities of Silas's mage rebellion and a little rank bribery to the right noble houses, it had been quite easy to import frankly ludicrous amounts of petricite, their most precious national treasure, sold for the low price of Piltover's specialists manufacturing blades and armor that could stand up to the rebel mages. The elevator came to a halt with a dull clunk, and Wren stepped off with the blackguards following close behind, pushing the slab toward the central mechanism. It was funny. Despite being one of the most advanced pieces of machinery anywhere, Wren had always thought the mechanism resembled a tree more than anything else. It occupied a vast space close to 40 meters across, and easily twice that high, and had a wide circular trunk that rose up almost 20 meters. From the base of it, hundreds of thick, heavily insulated cables spooled out, and starting about 15 meters up, hundreds more cables sprouted like great black branches toward the walls, roots and branches of a mechanical tree, Except in this case, those roots and branches were connected to hundreds upon hundreds of special petricide capacitors, all of which link to the final piece of the puzzle. At the center of the trunk, a meter up from the base, was an enormous, yawning alcove. It was a grand sarcophagus constructed from the purest and most dense petricite they could acquire, and hardwired upright into the trunk of that mechanical tree. To Wren, it looked almost as if the tree had grown up around it, in fact, and there was something very appealing about the aesthetic. Entombing a god of the old world into a machine of the new age. It was practically poetic.
"Is the machine ready, Doctor?"
Wren called. Dr. Corin Revick descended from one of the control lecterns, mopping a stream of sweat from his spotted brow in a grotesque display of biology that Wren had been thankful to discard, and said,
"It is, Officer, but..."
He turned to look down at Seraphine, hesitated, then said,
"Is that really her? Is that really Jana Wren?"
"Her host, yes,"
Wren replied.
He shook his head in disbelief. "She's just a child."
Rolling her eyes, Wren reached up and grabbed him by his glass jaw and wrenched his face painfully around until their gazes were locked.
"Fifthly, she's a Zonite, which makes her closer to toad spawn than anything. Secondly, if you're having a crisis of conscience at this late stage, Doctor, then may I politely suggest you put on your big boy trousers and get over it. And I remind you, your daughter is our property until you fulfill your end of the bargain. So if children are your worry, perhaps look to your own household first."
Corin clenched his jaw and stared down at Seraphine for a long moment before letting out a defeated sigh and saying,
"Yes. Yes, of course.
Good talk,"
Wren replied thinly.
"Now."
She turned to the blackguards.
"Release her manacles, but keep her restrained. But do not activate your staves unless she attacks, understood? They burn out summer tinder and cost almost as much as one of you idiots to manufacture."
"Compliance,"
Wren winced.
"A silent nod will do, thank you,"
she said dryly. And to think she'd once felt a measure of kinship to the blackguards, she still did a bit the first models. The March of Progress had left original 105 structurally inferior, their bodies unable to undergo further enhancement, but despite that, they routinely displayed marginally better operational speeds than the newer models. And that shouldn't be the case, given that the technology in the latest Mark of Blackguard was far more advanced, but then, many of them had been made from Demacian volunteers. Perhaps it was the Piltoven in the originals that was making them so effective in spite of the inferior technology. Wren had no proof of that, but she liked to think it was true, that some fundamental essence of progress remained instilled in the original soldiers of her first visit. The last of Seraphine's chains fell away, and as the blackguards hoisted her up like a rag doll off of the slab, Wren said,
"Support her arms, legs, and neck, and follow me. Do not damage the host."
"Compliance."
Another wince. It seemed a silent assent was not within their operational parameters.
"Voice box modulators,"
she muttered.
"My kingdom for some voice box modulators."
Together, the blackguards carried the prone form of Seraphine Arctura toward the sarcophagus where Corin Revick was doing the final checks. It was as they reached it, though, that Wren heard a weak, pitiful cough come from behind her, and she turned back to find Seraphine glaring at her with one half-open eye. There was so little color to her face, and her gaze was glazed with pain and the effects of the petricite solution, but she still had some spirit, which was good. The harder she fought, the easier it would be to extract the aspect from her body.
"Good morning,"
Wren said cheerfully.
"How's your nap? Can I get you anything? Eggs, bacon? Personally, I recommend the whitefish fillet. It's quite fresh."
Fuck you.
"Fuck you too, you fisherfolk cunt,"
Wren hissed venomously before gesturing sharply at the alcove and saying,
"Enter the host."
"Compliance."
Seraphine struggled weakly as the blackguards manhandled her into the yawning petricite grave of the sarcophagus. She started to tremble and foam at the mouth the moment she was inside, her body reacting violently to the neutralizing effects of the stone. Automated manacles snapped into place around her wrists, waist, neck, thighs, and calves, sealing her in place as the blackguards stepped back. Once they were clear, Wren took their place, her hands folded neatly behind her back as she watched Seraphine's spasm in agony.
"This is a consequence of rejecting progress, Miss Arctura,"
Wren said, holding up a hand to forestall Corin from activating the final sequence.
"You could have joined Piltover and become one of our champions. You had the opportunity to fight for the winning side, for the right side, in spite of your disgusting heritage. But no, no. You proved that, like all Zonites, you were only at home in the filth, and that is why you are going to die screaming.
She'll come for me? Seraphine bit out.
I hope she does,
Ren replied coldly.
Because then I'll get to drag that tired old bitch right over here, push her face against the viewport, and make you watch while I gut her like the animal she is.
She stepped back and made a slashing motion at Corrin, who immediately punched in the last few sequences. The lid of the sarcophagus slammed shut, and the bolts fired with a cascade of pneumatic hisses as they locked it in place. The machine began to hum, and all around them, the runes carved into the base of the mechanism began to glow a fierce azure blue. Ren didn't bother to suppress the wide smile that came over her as she stepped so close to the armored plate glass viewport set into the lid that it fogged with her breath. Seraphine thrashed in her restraints as her eyes began to glow as the holy arcane of Janahrem was siphoned out of her. Taking a deep breath, she blew it out across the glass, fogging it, then brought up one finger, made two dots, and then scrawled a little half-moon beneath them into a crude facsimile of a smile.
And progress marches on,
Ren said proudly.
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.